party. Set, let's go. Welcome to the Narc Abuse Breakdown podcast.
Love bombing can be very subtle, can look like the narcissist actually making sense for once in their life.
Narcissistic abuse is a predictable pattern of abuse carried out by a person with narcissistic personality disorder or high narcissistic traits.
What are they going to use to be able to really control you?
I'm Claire Auden, and together with Adriana Bucci from Let's Get Your Shift Together and Telsha Edinburgh from the T on NPD, we discuss different aspects of narcissistic abuse as well as reflecting on our own personal experiences. I'm on the way, I'm going
all the way up. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm Claire Auden.
I'm Adriana Bucci.
I'm Telsha Edinburgh.
And today we're answering the questions, does the narcissist know what they're doing? Do they know they're a narcissist? And can they change? Does the narcissist know what they're doing?
Yep.
Yes. Definitely.
Categorically. That was a short episode. Thanks, guys. Tune in next week.
Well, yeah, they know what they're doing. And, you know, I will say this, though. Do they know that, and I know this question is probably going to come up. Well, okay, after they say, well, do they know what they're doing? The next question is going to be, okay, well, do they know that they're a narcissist? Wow. But they know that they're manipulators. They know that they manipulate. They know that they drain. They know that they hurt people. They know that they don't feel like everyone else. They know all of these things. And they'll tell you in certain terms, if you just really listen to them, and sometimes they have off moments where they will actually start to speak truth to you. Uh-huh. And they'll start to tell you some of those things. But do they know what they're doing? Absolutely. Do they care? No.
Yeah. I think that they're aware that they're manipulating you. They know when they're lying. They're not that delusional. And they definitely know that they're abusing you. They have cognitive empathy, even if they don't have felt empathy. They can see the tears on your face. They know what that means. But I would say that they're not aware of like the underlying why. They're generally kind of acting and reacting on the surface without being super aware of why they're doing it underneath.
Yeah, they 1,000% know what they're doing. And, you know, the way I like to explain it to my clients is that who they are in public, or depending on who their audience is versus who they are behind closed doors, are two completely different people. And it takes a lot of awareness to know who is in front of you and how you're acting based on who's in front of you, right? So they're not in like this blacked out trance state where, you know, they have no clue what they're doing.
I want you to think.
Exactly. Exactly. They want you to think they are. But, you know, I always turn it back onto the person with empathy. If you were shown receipts of some sort or told by the people that you love that this is how you're behaving, and you genuinely had no recollection of it, would you not like voluntarily get yourself committed to like figure out what's going on?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So they know. Good. They know. And they know that they want supply from their targets. Like they know that they thrive off of whoever their target is, emotional reaction. And that's what they're feeding off of. And they're basically, you know, living in the moment, improvising ways to get that supply from whichever given target is in front of them in that moment.
And the thing is that their top priorities are getting their needs met completely one-sidedly without a care in the world about how that affects anyone else, protecting their image to the outside world and particularly to themselves. And basically they know that they're hurting you, but like Telsha said before, it's just collateral damage and they don't care on the effect. Like those are their top priorities, no matter what.
Exactly. And them protecting their image can manifest in ways that might be confusing to other people, because it might seem like, you know, they like what Claire was saying earlier, that they have that cognitive empathy. So they might appear to be caring in certain scenarios, and that can get very confusing for people, but it's all damage control. It's all too, you know, for the optics, basically, so that people see them in a certain light and, you know, the reality of who they are with their target during the devalue discard stage is basically who they are.
Yeah, and they generally show that empathy in front of people when they're performing and trying to look like a great person, or when they're trying to get something from you and manipulate you, or as you're walking out the door and they're trying to reel you back in. They don't show you that empathy when you're at home alone, it's past the love bombing phase, you're sick, you need a glass of water, and they don't care. Their empathy is strategic.
Yeah. And, you know, and I was going to say this, it is strategic, but it's when you take it from a spiritual piece and you start to look at like the darkness of their soul and how they actually operate. Well, when we talk about the, you know, the kingdom of darkness, the enemy is not omniscient. He's not all knowing. Right? He doesn't know what affects you until he pokes you or you say it audibly out of your mouth. Then he knows, oh, that's what affects you. And so narcissists working with these dark forces on the inside of them, they do just what these dark forces do. They want to know what makes you tick, what makes you go off. What is going to get that supply? Because that's the vein that they're going to stay in to keep you walking on eggshells, to keep you nervous, to keep you an emotional wreck so that you can stay underneath their control. Because at that point, they have full control over you. So that's another piece to kind of look at it. Yeah, they know what they're doing. And even if they don't cognitively, which we know that they do, they know that something inside of them tells them that they have to do it. I've heard narcissists say that, you know, there's this voice in their head that tells them that they have to do certain things and they're unable to control their impulses. You know, they lack impulse control. And you're like, well, what is that? You know, like, what is it? Well, it's just this voice that goes off in our heads and we're unable to control it and we can't silence the voice. And I'm just like, I'm sure you can. Mm-hmm. So that same voice is the same thing that is propelling them. And, you know, you got to look at it like this. When you're talking about the spirit world, we're talking about something that is like age old. We're talking about things that have been around like way longer than we have, that has known humanity way longer than we have known humanity. So you're actually talking about things that are way beyond our scope or what we could think about manipulation. We have no clue. You know what I'm saying? To what level they understand how to manipulate humanity. That's working inside of them. I mean, just take a look at that. And that's just enough to just like, wait, what? You know?
Yeah. Do you think that everything is calculated? Do you think like they're just sort of planning everything out and like thinking about how they can get you to do this and that?
I do.
You do?
I do. What do you think, Adriana?
Absolutely. 100%. Like they go through that love bomb, devalue, discard cycle. And that's all you're going to see from the narcissist. And they, you know, when the love bombing is done, then it's the devalue, right? Then it's the discard. And then it's the love bombing all over again, because they love bomb you because they know they want to get your trust. And then as soon as they're satisfied, they've gained your trust, then we go back into the devalue. And they're doing that on purpose. Like they're very aware of, you know, okay, this person has drank the Kool-Aid, so to speak, of my love bombing. Time to start devaluing because, you know, I just gained their trust. So it's time for the shenanigans. And, you know, they just cycle through that, and that they're very much aware of the fact that they're doing it, and they're doing it intentionally because they're getting supply from you. And they're inducing those emotions of guilt, shame, and fear within their targets, because anyone who's in those emotional states or a state of bamboozlement or a state of confusion is always going to be easier to control. And they know that. And that's why things make no fucking sense when you're dealing with a narcissist. And you're more likely to, you know, like when you're confused about something, the first thing you want is to gain clarity. So you're more likely to ask the narcissist for clarification or, you know, to kind of have a conversation about things and make sense of things. And that's supply for them, because then you're engaging in this like 3 hour long conversation into the wee hours of the morning. You've just wasted so many hours of your life and you're more confused. And they're literally doing that to deplete you of your energy, because that's what they're feeding off of.
Yeah, to emotionally exhaust you. And they're also kind of desperately rewriting history and trying to gaslight you and change the order of things as that self-protection mechanism, because they're trying to protect themselves, control you, confuse you into compliance and get their way. I do think, though, that the more like towards like pathological narcissistic personality disorder, that the narcissist is more chaotic. The internal processes are more chaotic. Like, I'm not excusing their behavior or anything like that, but I think that they do live in such a delusion that a lot of the time they're acting and reacting. I think that they absolutely understand when they're hurting you. They know what abuse is. They know they're abusing you. But I think that they do live in such internal chaos that, you know, a lot of it is, like I said, just acting and reacting. I think that a lot of narcissists are kind of unconsciously repeating patterns without the insight to be able to understand like what they're actually doing. I think a lot of them lack the capacity to actually look at themselves to plan things out. But I mean, if we're dealing with more psychopathic traits, I think that they're planning it out.
And I think narcissists are planning it out, but it's more improvised what they're planning out, because it's not like they're planning out like their tactics for the next 5 years, right? They're just planning out their tactic in that moment to get supply in that moment and to get whatever they exactly, right? Like to get what they want as it's happening. So it's like, that's why, you know, things can just go left field out of nowhere when it seems like you're having a great time with this person, things are going back on track, and then all of a sudden it's like, you know, you breathed wrong and that's the biggest problem in the world. And now they're causing a fight out of it. And they, you know, in my opinion, it's like they know they don't like, it's not like they will ever feel your pain because they don't have that empathy, but they know that they get off on seeing you in pain. And that's what they're trying to create.
Yeah. I think that also, you know, people with personality disorders also tend to constantly misperceive other people's facial expressions, tones of voice, and can be quite paranoid, particularly when you're dealing with like ASPD and NPD. And I think that the narcissist has such a negative, critical inner voice that, and they also project their own character onto you, that they are continually thinking that you're going to attack them or criticize them or disrespect them or that you're trying to take them down. And so a lot of the time they do misperceive the way that you breathed as an attack. And I think that it's that level of, I think it's pathological, like it's that level of paranoia, and they see the world as a hostile place because they see the world as they are.
Yeah. So I think when, you know, when you're talking about in the moment, they definitely, I love what Adriana said, because it's so true. And what you said as well, Claire, because it's in the moment that they're doing this, because it's in the moment that they have to have it. But when we look at it in broad scope, they don't have the ability. And this is what makes it so crazy. It's because I'm sitting there like, how can you be so stupid? How can you be so manipulative, but yet so stupid? You know what I'm saying? Because they don't have the ability of foresight. Like they know that they're manipulating you, but they don't have a sense enough to know, hey, if I keep doing this and keep doing this, this person is going to eventually get tired of this and they're going to leave. Like, and then I'm going to be like,
I don't think you're going to leave.
They don't ever prepare for that. And it's like, how could one be so dumb? Just a special kind of stupid. You know what I'm saying? And I'm just like, wow, that's amazing.
Wow. I do have clients saying to me, like, if they're such master manipulators, why didn't they like do this, this, and this? Like, why couldn't they think that if they did this, it was going to have this reaction? Like, why? Like, it would have been smarter to have done it this way. And I'm like, because it's a personality disorder. They're not like master manipulators. Their internal processes aren't right. The cognitive processes aren't right. Their perceptions aren't right. They're kind of doing their best to control you and manipulate you from their warped mental space.
And they don't have empathy, right? Yeah. And the way I see it, and this is just my opinion, I don't know if this is like written somewhere or whatever, but in my personal opinion, to really piggyback off of Telsha's point that they're so stupid, I think empathy is like just the lowest form of intelligence that a human being can possess, you know? Mm-hmm. And if, because it's like literally, like you learn, oh, okay, this hurts. I'm not going to do that to somebody else because I did not like how that felt. Right. If you can't, if you don't have that, like you're kind of dumb. Like, you know what I mean? Like they can be book smart. They can have like a PhD or, you know, be highly educated and all that. But like, if they don't have empathy, like you're a fucking idiot.
Yeah. Because you keep doing the same thing over and over. You don't. Yeah. Empathy also teaches you how to, it trains you to, you learn from having empathy. Yes. Like you said, you learn. But if you don't have it, then you just keep repeating the same dumb mistakes and you just keep doing it over and over. It was kind of like, it's kind of like that circular conversation that they do to drive you crazy. And it's like, haven't you done this before? Don't you think that this person is going to catch on to that? Like, why would you just want to have a conversation? Like, but that's the way that they love to have conversation is in circles, you know? So yeah, empathy is needed, but they don't have it. So they don't learn from their mistakes.
Yeah. How would you guys define empathy for the listeners? Just to be really clear.
This hurts. I'm not going to do it to someone else.
Period.
Yeah. So it feels like the ability to be able to put yourself in another person's shoes and feel what they're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's an emotional connection to an action or an action or a word. It's an emotional connection that allows one to feel the moment or to feel what that action or that situation could cause and to make a determination whether they will want to do that again or not want to do that again. It causes one to make a decision based upon an emotional connection to an action, person, place, or thing is how I would describe it.
Yeah. And so when they're guilting you and manipulating you, they're using their cognitive empathy. Because I don't have felt empathy. Yeah. Because intellectually, they have the idea of how this is going to make you feel and how it's going to affect you and affect your behavior.
Yes. Yeah. And they're looking for that because they want raw emotion, right? Because that's the thing that really, and it's so crazy because sometimes when you just give them that raw emotion, like you just, they poke the bear and then they just set you off and you're just like screaming and yelling and like doing like maybe hurling houses down the street or something, you know, just crazy. Like you just like went, lost your mind. Then the narcissist will go and sit down and just like,
It's like a nice, cool lemonade on a hot day.
Leave it, and you are
and
like
just sipping your emotions, like lovely.
And they have that smirk on their face too, as they are seeing you in that state of emotional distress that they caused, and you can see it in their face that they're literally getting off on you having this reaction.
Yeah.
So true.
So do they know that they're narcissists? Does a narcissist know that they are a narcissist?
They say they're different.
They know that they're different. Yeah.
If you tell them that, they'll say, I'm not a narcissist. You're a narcissist.
You're a narcissist.
You're a narcissist. Or the new thing is, you know, they'll ask, you're not a narcissist, are you? Because I've dated like 3 or 4 of them.
Yes.
And they're so horrible. You're not a narcissist, right?
Yeah. That's a bit of a red flag. Everyone in the narcissist life is a narcissist. When someone just starts telling you all of their friends are narcissists, all of their family members are, their boss, their exes are all narcissists, you need to take a good look at that person.
Like a real good look.
A real.
Really good. Like, yeah, I'm going to like a magnifying glass look. Microscope.
Yeah.
So yeah, they know, but they don't tell you most of the time. They just say, I'm not like everyone else. I don't think like everyone else. I don't process things like everyone else. I do this. I do that. And you're just like, yeah, you're an idiot. Yeah, you're something. But yeah, this is what you are. We'll discuss that later. But you're right. You're definitely different. Got a whole bullet storm going in my life. Thanks. Yeah.
So most narcissists, like, they don't have the label. They're not sitting there like, I am a narcissist. Yeah. And they also don't think that there's anything wrong with them. They're like, yeah, I'm different, but in a good way. I'm different because I'm not an idiot, because I don't have those emotions, and because, you know, all of their manipulations and their tricks work, and their mask gets them through doors. It gets them what they want, reels people in. So they see that they're different, but they think that it's good. And I've interviewed narcissists who have said that they have been proud of themselves when they got the diagnosis. They were like, yeah, I'm a narcissist. Go me. I'm not an idiot. I know how to like work. I know how to get what I want. I'm not held up by my emotions. Which is wild, because narcissists are the most emotional people that you will find.
I was getting ready to say, they're not emotional. Are you kidding me? No, you just don't freaking care.
Ask a narcissist.
It's a basket case.
Not emotional.
They are the kings and queens of contradictions. Like,
yes.
The shit they say just does not make sense. And so for a narcissist to be proud of being diagnosed as a narcissist and to say like, oh, like, look how much better I am than everyone because I don't have those stupid emotions that the peasants have is so narcissistic.
It is. And what, they're it like emotionally stunted. Like they want the authority of a king and the accountability of a toddler. Are you kidding me? Like, they don't know how to do anything but emotion. And they're sitting there saying, I'm not held up by emotions. No, you're held up by stupidity and the fact that you're stuck in your emotions, you nut job. You know, it's just like, you really want to just go in. Like, are you kidding me right now? Like, this is amazing.
Did you guys have your narcissist tell you that they're incredibly logical and they made very logical, sound decisions and that they weren't driven by their emotions like you are? Because I used to get that a lot. From mine. Meanwhile, there's like a whole grown adult tantrum if the slightest thing is wrong, like a full-on screaming tantrum if the slightest thing is wrong. Adriana's nodding.
Right, yo, that is. I mean, I just find that very interesting. I really do, because they do throw tantrums, right? And they throw them in different ways, because sometimes they throw them like just doing the silent treatment. Like, I'm just going to be silent. You know, like a toddler would just like throw his toys, you know, but the toddler that has learned silence is just go in the corner and just kind of look and get ready. He's like, I'm scream and I'm going to take a BM right now because you don't want me to. Woo! You know what I'm saying? And you're just like, but we're about to go. You're going to stop and tend to the kid. And he's like, he's planned this whole situation out. That is what a narcissist does. Like, they're going to take a dump on your whole situation, like take a crap on your life. And they're going to do it screaming and yelling in a whole tantrum, you know? And it's
bumping their fate, throwing things.
And they do, they will do that from time to time.
Absolutely. And they'll shame you and make fun of you for having a normal emotional reaction to their abuse. But meanwhile, you know, it's just one giant contradiction.
Absolutely.
I'm talking about a whole big mind screw, like for real.
Yeah.
Like, this is not happening right now, but it is happening. I'm not going to gaslight myself. This is really happening.
Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah.
So most narcissists don't know that they're a narcissist, as in they don't know the terminology. They haven't looked it up and they don't think that there's anything wrong with them. They know that they're different, but they think that they're different in a good way. Can narcissists change?
Absolutely not. Because it would take actual self-reflection and making a choice to change and doing extensive inner work to change over a long period of time. And they just, that's not their thing. So they basically just, they'll change their target instead of changing themselves, because that's what works for them. Because that's, you know, that's how they get their needs met for supply. And it's just supply over everything with these people.
And they change their mask, but it's only mask B. So when they're mirroring someone and people think that they've changed, like a narcissist leaves that person and gets into the next relationship And they're like, oh, they've changed. They're treating them differently. Like they have new hobbies, interests, new clothes, new words. The way that they speak is different. They've changed for this person. And it's like that change is literally just mask deep. It's part of their act. But to actually change, like you're saying, it takes accountability, the ability to self-reflect, the ability to tell the truth, and they're just not going to do it.
They're not. And they, and you know, they, I will say this, they don't change who they are as narcissists. Now they do change for different supplies. Like it, this supply may need them to kind of change and be, you know, because we've seen them change their hair. Some of them will grow a beard. You know, they'll put an earring in, or, you know, they'll change aesthetically, you know, a lot of times, you know, most of the time it's aesthetic, but, for them, as far as changing their personality or the disorder itself, it never changes, but they will, you know, become a chameleon for supplies.
Yeah.
They will do that.
Yeah. During the love bombing period, they change the act to get that person in. But then once they've got that person, the devaluation starts and everyone gets devalued and they just revert back to what they are. And I like to say what they are, not who they are, what they are. I always in my videos, I'm like, what they are. Okay, let's be real here. Adriana, your mother was a narcissist.
Yep.
Yeah.
Raging narcissist. She did not change. She died 4 years ago and she took all of her bullshit with her literally to her deathbed. And like, you know, you would think that like when someone has reached the end of their life, they might have, you know, a coming to God moment, some regrets, something, whatever. But no, that did not happen at all. And she basically, like, it's kind of a long story, but pretty much she started getting like dementia and things like that. And I was like pretty much like very low / no contact with her. And it was just at the point where I was starting to get like some weird voicemails from her. So I was just like, okay, like I'll listen to the voicemails and then determine if I need to call senior services on her or something like that. But then the neighbor, her next door neighbor did it for her anyways. But then she was like driving her car like an hour away from Toronto. And then she was found on the highway and then taken to a hospital. So she ended up having a heart attack and just, you know, advanced Alzheimer's apparently. And so she was not herself. So you could say she changed, but like, no, that was the Alzheimer's. Like she was, when she was still able to talk, like she just kind of had this weird broken record of, oh, you, Tristan and Chewy, so my husband and our previous dog, are going to come live at my house and we're going to play the piano and we're going to eat bagels with smoked salmon and cream cheese. And I'm like, yeah, okay. Like, who is this woman? And I didn't really have a conversation. And I didn't have a conversation with her until like the doctor declared that she was like in like end of life phase. Right. Cause I was just like, fuck you guys, deal with it. Like I've washed my hands of this woman. And so then she got moved to a hospice because she had a massive heart attack. I was going every week, not because I wanted to, but because I thought like, okay, this is it. Like, this is it. And so it's like, it's almost like she tricked me into going each week, but it is what it is. But there was like maybe a week or two before she actually died. So she is like skin and bones. She hadn't eaten for like 8 weeks. Like they didn't have any IVs in her. So it's just like, I don't get it how this was like physically, scientifically possible, but okay. She was not speaking, not eating, not drinking. She kind of looked past you, like literally actively dying. And it was during COVID, like the early stages of COVID. So it was like, you know, she died July of 2020, but this all started from May. And the hospice nurse was in the room with me. And we both saw her give me the death glare. You know that look. When they, her eyes go black. Her eyes went black. She gave me that look of pure hatred and disgust. And then the nurse right beside me was like, that's what you grew up with? I'm like, yeah. And she's like, I am so sorry that you had to go through that. And I completely understand why you've been estranged from her this whole time. And I'm like, thank you. And, you know, it's just wild that she's actively dying. She has not eaten for like 6-7 weeks at that point, and like literally like on death's doorstep. Yeah. No energy to do anything, but she had the energy to give me the glare. So
yeah,
if anyone needs anecdotal evidence that they literally do not change,
yeah,
there it is.
Not even when facing their own mortality. And they get worse with age.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. People think that they're going to grow out of it and mature. They don't.
They get worse.
Yeah.
And the thing
I'm so about sorry you went through that, Adriana.
Yeah, me too, because you know what? It's sad to have a parent that's like that. And, you know, I get it and I understand, because it is, it's, you know, too, because you look for your parent to nurture you, especially a mother, you know, to nurture, to have that, that empathy towards you. But for narcissistic parents, especially a mother, because they have suffered trauma that they've never dealt with, that trauma translates to jealousy of you. They're jealous of you. They don't. And I mean, I'm like, how are you jealous of, you know, a child that you gave birth to? But this is when you know that it's just not natural, because in the natural course of nurturing and childbearing brings about a bond with the child. Yeah. But when you can't do that, it's unnatural, right? Yeah. And so they don't get the fact that, okay, this is my child. They literally look at you like competition. Like
competition.
Try to like minimize your every accomplishment, and your children, they will amplify everything about your children, you know, and your child is the best at everything, when they could probably like really suck. But the parent doesn't want you to ever get any accolades or to feel like you're being validated, because their competition is with you, not with the grandkid. And so they really pit you against your own child. So they start to compare the two of you to make you want to hate your own child. This is how bad it is. And how do I know? Right? Because I've dealt with the situation. And it's like, wow, you know, but it's very disheartening. And I'm very sorry that you had to watch that. And, you know, when you look at it from a spiritual piece, like you said something, well, you know, a lot of times when people are active in the active death stage, like they're actively leaving, they have what could be called as like moments of reality. But when you have a person that has been like this the whole entire time, you know, their whole entire life, at that point, sometimes people will note that they were the most horrible during that time, right before they died. Like the most horrible. And it's almost like, this is my last ditch effort to destroy you before I leave this earth. So let me pour out all the facts.
It's interesting what you were just saying about how they see their children as competition and they don't want their children to do better than they did. My dad had a very difficult relationship with his dad, and he did medicine. And when he got into medicine, his dad refused to talk to him for like a year because he didn't want him to do better than he did. He managed a pub and he didn't want my dad to do better than he did. He refused to support him. He refused to speak to him for like a year because he was like, oh, you know, you think you're better than us, whatever, rah, rah. He wasn't proud. My dad had to work 3 jobs to put himself through medical school. And there was no support because his dad was just simply threatened.
Wow. That is, but you know what? That's what they do. And it's so unfortunate because they don't, because they're emotionally stunted, they don't bond with their children. They don't have that connection with the child to say that, listen, I'm supposed to love this child. I'm supposed to have empathy. You know, I'm supposed to do whatever I can. Now they will provide your needs and to make sure you're taken care of like that physically, you know,
a lot of people hold that over your head the whole time. You're so lucky I fed you.
Yep. Absolutely.
The stuff to keep them out of jail.
Yay. Right. Yeah. And so that's what they will do, but that it's not gonna, you're not gonna have a road ahead. And every time you think that you've gotten to a place where you guys are now starting to have like some normalcy, they'll do something to upset it. And they pit the children against each other, like the siblings, you know, and it's disgusting is what it is, you know, literally, it really is.
Yeah.
So it's very sad to have a parent that is narcissistic or a narcissist. To me, I don't really see a difference in the narcissistic and a actual narcissist, because sometimes they're so far on the spectrum that it's like, no, you, I don't care if you have a tiny bit of empathy, you're a demon. You know what I'm saying? You know?
Yeah, 100%. And then just the one thing I wanted to add about narcissistic parents is that they don't go into having children for whatever the right reasons are. Like, you know, I'm going to raise this child to become a functional adult and contributing member of society, or I'm going to show this child how beautiful the world we live in is. They go into parenthood because they know that they have a new little brain that they can manipulate and mold to be a lifetime source of supply for them. And, you know, to also piggyback off of Telsha's point that, like, you know, it could be because they had trauma growing up and that's why they're like that. But there's also narcissists who didn't have trauma and they just were never told no growing up. And they just grew up with that sense of entitlement and they continue that over and over again. So it's like, you know, whether or not your narcissistic parent, if for anyone who's listening who has a narcissistic parent, whether or not it's because they went through trauma or, you know, they were just like spoiled and overindulged and like never learned the word no, it's besides the point because they were the adult the entire time. And it was their job to be that nurturing adult. And they chose to bring you onto this planet. Like, you had zero choice in the matter. Like, people don't get to choose their parents. It's just like, that's the cards you're dealt. And it's, you know, it's not your fault is basically what I'm trying to say. Yeah. And there's no excuse for it.
Yeah. Right. So I know the next question on people's minds and another really common question that we get is, what if we go to therapy? What if the narcissist goes to therapy? Or what if we go to couples therapy or I go to therapy with my parent? Then can they change?
Oh, no.
No.
Do not do it. So what's going to happen if you go to therapy with a narcissist? And I can, you know, also share about my late narcissistic mother, where I actually brought her to a therapy appointment and all she did was manipulate the therapist.
Exactly.
And basically, yeah. And then, like, you know, the next therapy session I had with her, like, we talked about the meeting we had with her and she's like, oh, your mother's so lovely. You can tell she really loves you and cares about you. And I'm like,
yeah.
Right. And it's just, it's not gonna happen. Love it.
That's what they do, though. It's so, you're like, she's a freaking wow. And you're
she's
just
the
like,
reason I'm fucking here. She's the reason I'm in therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because they're quick to tell you, well, you've been in therapy all of these years and it doesn't seem to help you. And I've had to say, well, I've been in therapy all of these years because you wouldn't go.
Yep.
Yes.
You
very
know,
true. Yeah.
And it's just like, it really is. And you know what? And it's so sad because I don't know if you guys have ever experienced this. Like, they'll take things of yours, throw it away, move things in the middle of the floor, you know, like rearrange your stuff. Okay. And you never ask them to touch it. But it's like they're using that parental authority to, you know, to do certain things. And it's like, but this is my house. Like, why would you touch that? Like, mm-hmm. These are my things. Like, why would you feel, or why would you think you had the liberty to do that? And it's just so amazing that they could take that parental authority that they feel like they have to another level, even when you're an adult, and still try to make you feel this small, even as an adult, and you're paying your own bills. Like, I don't understand that.
Yeah.
It's bizarre.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's interesting. Just going back to the therapy point, particularly in romantic relationships, a lot of people say that, oh, a narcissist would never go to therapy. If they go to therapy, they're not a narcissist. But that's not true. A lot of narcissists will go to therapy and will particularly go to couples therapy. But the reason that they go is either to get validation, to manipulate the therapist and love on the therapist and say everything the therapist wants to hear so that they can say that they're not the problem. Look, the therapist said I'm not the problem, because they're really good at reading what people want to hear and, like Adriana said, manipulating them. Or they go there to learn your soft spots and weaknesses so that they can better manipulate you. Or they just go there to triangulate you with the therapist, and they further gaslight you outside of the sessions with what was said.
1,000%. It's, I've had clients who have tried couples therapy with, their significant other who's a narcissist, and it's just always been a colossal waste of time, because exactly to your point, they just manipulate the therapist. And what's really mind-boggling to me is that so many therapists don't recognize the manipulation, because they don't understand narcissistic abuse on like a deep level, which literally causes so much more trauma to the person seeking help for this situation. And so, it's just like, you have to be really careful what therapist you work with. And, a lot of them, and, particularly with couples therapy, like, they're not using any sort of lens of like, is this person being manipulative? They just take everything at face value, and they don't see those manipulation tactics playing out. And, that's just another tactic for the narcissist to continue stringing you along and try to make you think that like they're working on things, or they care, or they're actively trying to change, but they don't. And then there's some cases where narcissists will do individual therapy, but like the reality is they're just, they're either pretending to go and they just have this hour blocked off each week pretending to talk to a therapist, or they're going, but they're giving the therapist only one side of the story, and getting that validation.
Therapist a made up story. Yeah, they're rewriting history to the therapist.
Exactly.
Yeah, mine used to do that. That was fun.
Oh, good time.
Yeah. Well, and then my psychologist said this, and it's like, did they though? Did you actually tell them what happened? No. What were you going to say, Tasha? Sorry.
No, I mean, but no, that's so interesting that you would say that, because mine would come back from the therapist like he had been in a fight. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was the worst fight ever. Like, I don't feel like going there again, crying my eyeballs out. And it was just like, it was the worst, meeting of his life. You know what I'm saying? And I was just like, what? You just kind of like, why would that be? Because you're just literally going to try to look, but they don't want to be told that they have a problem. They don't want to be told that they need to change. And so that's why it's so bad for them, is because the therapist is really a great therapist is standing that mirror up in front of them constantly, and they can't take what they see.
But they're not going to stay in therapy with someone like that. They're only going to go to a therapist that's buying the love bombing, buying the story and buying the lies, and it doesn't challenge them. And narcissists go to therapy to be told that they're not the problem.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, that's the unicorn therapist who actually gets it and can actually see through the manipulation tactics and said things that your narc did not want to hear.
Yeah, he stayed in there probably about maybe 2.5-3 weeks. And then he lied about the other
thing. They don't stay.
I'm surprised he lasted that long.
I'm like,
it wasn't just a one and done session.
How was the therapy appointment? Yeah, I went so-and-so. Then I checked the phone records. Like, yeah, he was on the phone with his best friend the whole entire time. So I'm like, how are you in a therapy session? And right here, it shows that you were on like a hour and 3 minute call with your best friend. And it, so then, of course, he hit the freaking ceiling because I called him out on his lie. You know, it's like, what? So amazing.
See, mine would come out of the sessions like talking about his therapist with like her first name and being like, oh, I had a great session with like, let's say freaking Sandy, whatever her name was. And it's like, he's just got her wrapped around his little finger. Like he's been loving it. And it's like, yeah, well, basically like she said that when you said that, that was not cool. And when you said that, that wasn't okay. And he just goes in there and plays the victim. And they just triangulate you with the therapist. And they also make it up. I mean, I have clients that come to me and say like, oh, well, my narcissist therapist said this about me. And it's like, I doubt it. Mm-hmm. I doubt it. You weren't in the session. He's just saying that she said that about you. It's not true. I doubt it. Yes.
They tell lies on the therapist. You know, they lie to the therapist and then they lie on the therapist. And so you don't know what's truth and what's lies. So it's just like you have to throw the baby out with the bathwater because everything is contaminated. You just need to go. Bye. You know, it's like, there's no saving it. You can't, there's, and people try to, and I don't know about you guys, but it's like when I have clients, it's like, oh, well, they're going to go to therapy. And then I'm just sitting there and I'm thinking to myself, like, what part of this don't you understand that this person is not wanting to be better? And they've tried this before. We're going to try it again. Okay. Yeah. Well, let me know.
It's a trauma bond. Like we said before, hope is the last thing to die. When you're trauma bonded to someone, as you know, like you have this endless hope that they're going to change. Every time that they make a concession or say that they're going to change, when you're trauma bonded, you believe it every single time.
It's sad. It really is. I mean, it really is. It's sad. Because the person ends up wasting so much time, you know, literally in this situation with this person, with the narcissist, and the narcissist is only abusing them. And, you know, and it's an abuse and misuse of the person's time because they don't want to get better. They just want to be tolerated. And they want to be coddled in the situation that they're in. And it's like, no, that's not living. It's actually just existing, you know, with a person, because how can you live when you're constantly walking on eggshells? Your nerves are, you're on edge. They're raw. You're a freaking basket case. You can't remember things from 1 minute to the next. And then you turn around and then you have to repeat the whole process the next day. Day by day, you're in that state of mind. That is bad.
Yeah.
That's horrible.
And the narcissist is just continually cutting you at the knees and creating that desperation and dependency on them so that you look to them for everything. Validation, reassurance, what reality is, what color the sky is, what color grass is. Like you look to them for everything and they've deliberately cultivated this state in you. And we're going to do a whole episode on trauma bonding as well. So the conclusion is narcissists don't change. And don't go to therapy with one.
Exactly. Yeah.
Unless you want to be told that you are a narcissist yourself.
And unless you want to waste time.
And they're so good at weaponizing therapy speak as well. They go there and then they gaslight you and they're like, you're stonewalling me. You're gaslighting me. Like they just project onto you and then they tie you up with the therapy speech as well. And that's so incredibly damaging.
That's amazing. Me, because I would just probably walk straight out of the session. I would not be able to handle that. That is just like, I mean, because if you know that person is like that, why would you, I wouldn't be able to stay because I would just probably want to just like do something really horrible to them. So I'm going to leave. You know, either do something or say something really, really bad. They probably would like not talk to me ever again in life. So I'm gonna leave now. I think this is a good point for me to leave.
Yeah, the therapist is definitely gonna see you as the problem by the end of that session.
Like, yeah, you got a problem, but this one right here has a problem too. Well, they gave it to me. It's about 10 years with this. I think you probably have a problem too, Mr. Therapist or Miss Therapist. Pretty bad.
All right, ladies, it's been a great conversation.
It's been wonderful.
Thanks.
Great chat. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Narc Abuse Breakdown podcast. Click follow for future episodes. Leaving a review helps others find the podcast. Plus, check out the show notes for all of our social media channels and websites.